Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. What a day. We have a lot of news to talk about. I don't know if you're aware of this. A lot of news happened yesterday, and a lot of news is going to be happening today. So, consequently, we have many, many items to discuss. I was sending out some suggested topics yesterday. I sent out, I think, 20. I couldn't stop. I was just,
and that.
So there's a lot to talk about, and it's all tied together, obviously. So, or at least most of it is. So we will try to get to whatever we can here. And we were just discussing. We're going to try to be as discreet as possible.
And not lose our license.
And that's right. And try to not go for the obvious joke, but just try to say what is in the reports and so forth.
But the jokes are amazing.
Go on Twitter.
Oh, my God.
And enjoy
it. It's been so diverting.
It's pretty funny.
Here's the thing. It's not really... depression that so many of us are feeling is not alleviated by telling jokes at this stage of the game.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And that this particular...
I'm putting on my Russian look.
Okay, good. I thought for a minute it was a raincoat.
Reminding everybody that you can see this, right?
Yes, you can see this. If you go to WAMC.org and you go onto our video feed, you can see Rosemary and her...
Getting into our Russian mood.
Yes, her winter coat. Anyway, let me introduce the panel and then we'll actually get to the content of the program. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Frump, I'm glad to be on this side of the ground.
A hearty good morning. Rosemary, I don't know how seriously I can look at you. Right now you look like a lion. Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Teresa Bourgeois joins us. She is a communications consultant and our resident policy wonk, and we couldn't be more happy for her wonkiness. Good morning.
Oh, thank you, and delighted to be here.
Always wonderful to have you here. All right.
On full wonk today, for sure.
Good. There's a lot to talk about.
Wonk,
all right. Well, you know what? I'm almost thinking let's get the easy one out of the way first, and that is President Obama's farewell speech last night in Chicago, Illinois. Said goodbye and gave, I thought, a beautiful speech, a very important speech about a democracy and our duty as citizens and how we should become engaged and what we should do. A little bit of chiding, of telling us to get off our devices and actually do something. And, of course, huge shout-outs to people that were very important to him, his staff, of course, his wife, his family, and Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden. All around, I thought, a beautiful speech. Anybody have any comments as to...
I was sort of disappointed. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I know it'll be a big contrast to the performance we're likely to get today from Trump, who has a news conference. But basically, the speech was, I love my wife and Joe Biden and my children, and we did good, and America will survive. That's not much of a message.
Well, no, Rosemary, in an all due deference. I know,
you're all going to disagree.
Well, we got a message.
And then he cried.
I got a message yesterday saying, please don't ever disagree with Rosemary. But
good advice.
Because you're a sexist pig. I did want to say to you, and you know what I think of you and all the rest. I did want to say to you that I don't know that he had much choice. As he was leaving this, he wanted to leave on a good note. He wanted to leave on an upbeat note. He wanted to go up as opposed to down. And I think, by contrast, he did a terrific job of bringing a tear not only to his own eye but to everybody else's about what he had done and how he had tried to do it here. And he offered us a little bit of consolation by saying zig and zag, and that we're in zag right now. I think there are people all around this country who are clinically depressed about what's going on. And I saw him as a guy who was trying to address that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was a wonderful speech from someone who clearly has a reverence for the office of the president,
yeah,
and also a reverence for democracy. And I thought some of the things he said about our basic tenets of our democracy were really important, will be lasting, and I think he laid down a marker about his legacy, but he also laid down a marker about the threat that we are now facing to democracy without scaring people.
Absolutely right.
I think that they, you know, there was, I thought it was an important
question. So let me ask
well,
a very specific...
Can I, like, respond?
I just want to ask you a very specific question to respond to, if you don't mind, which is... What would you have liked to have heard?
I would have liked to have heard an Ike, an Eisenhower speech like that period of time. We're facing an unprecedented assault on the institutions of our democracy, including the presidency. And I would have liked a serious warning. I think scaring would have been better than reassuring, you know, we're strong and we can get through this. Eisenhower issued, as you remember, the very famous pay attention to this. So did, by the way, our first president, who said, George Washington, don't get involved in foreign entanglements. And Eisenhower said, watch out for the military-industrial congressional complex. It's a danger. And I didn't get that from him. I did feel like it was a feel-good speech. And I think we're way past needing feel-good speeches.
See, now, I thought he did that in his own cool, as they call it, cool way. But I also think that he sent a signal that he's not going away. You know, I
that line that I'll be with you every step of the way as a citizen until the end of my days.
And he's been making that more and more clear, I think, over the last week, that he is so concerned about what's going on that he's not going away.
We're working men to organize. That's where you'll find Joe Hill.
Right.
Well, he was ineffective when he was here as the president. He didn't make us safe. He didn't get across his own candidates. So what difference does it make if he's a powerless ex-president?
Well, I don't think he was ineffective as a president. I think the economy...
Hillary Clinton's not president. That's what he tried to do.
You know, he could have won, as he said, he could have won a third term if there was a third term.
I believe he could, but he didn't do it for Hillary.
Well, but Rosemary, doesn't that have to do also with Hillary?
Of course.
Yeah, and so, I mean, how can we blame that on entirely on Obama? Nobody ever tried harder than Obama and Michelle Obama to get Hillary elected.
And that is my point. If he was ineffective in protecting us in the future when he was president, had all the power of the presidency, what can he do? What does it mean? Why is it meaningful that as ex-president he will always be with us? You know, like this, the ghost.
I think one of the biggest...
Patrick Swayze. Sorry.
John I'm Patrick. Sorry to talk over you. I think one of the bigger challenges we have right now is a president-elect who is divisive and he gains his power by putting wedges... And that's very dangerous for our democracy. And one of the real strengths of President Obama is the capacity to draw people together and try to unite people. I could be wrong, but I think that we're going to need more of that as a counterbalance.
I'm sort of an optimist on this, too, and I agree with you. I think that that's what he did. I think that's why he tried to lift us up and to put his arm around us and to say it's going to be all right.
Rosemary, though, I did read two or three other people analysis of the speech saying that it just was not that beautifully written. Now, I didn't get that. I thought that there were a lot of good lines, but they said that some people wrote that he tried to do too many different things in the same speech. But I thought there's some beautiful and memorable lines, and he laid down some very important markers, particularly about democracy and the Constitution.
Yes, that is the key line. Sure. And that's exactly right.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will... address the elephant in the room. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. It is Tuesday, the 11th of January, and very nice to have you with us on this day. Okay, so as I said, the elephant in the room. This story broke yesterday. CNN broke it, although there have been aspects of the story that have been around for a long time. So a lot of different people started putting the pieces together yesterday. A classified report delivered to President Obama and President-elect Donald Trump last week included a section summarizing allegations that Russian intelligence services have compromising material and information on Trump's personal life and finances. According to U.S. officials, the officials said that U.S. intelligence agencies have not corroborated those allegations, but believe that the sources involved in the reporting were credible enough to warrant inclusion of their claims in the highly classified report on Russian interference in the presidential campaign. Trump, however, replied Tuesday night with a tweet declaring fake news a total political witch hunt. all capital letters. A senior U.S. official with access to the documents said that the allegations were presented at least in part to underscore that that Russia appeared to have collected embarrassing information on both major candidates, but released only material that might harm Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton, a reflection of Russian motivation that bolstered U.S. spy agencies' conclusion that Moscow sought to help Trump win. The inclusion of such unsubstantiated allegations in the election report, a development first reported by CNN, adds a disturbing new dimension to existing concerns about Russia's efforts to undermine American democracy. It also adds another bizarre twist to an already strange election year, injecting new controversy over the Trump team's relations with Russia just when the president-elect is trying to consolidate and launch his new administration. The one thing I'm reading to you from the Washington Post, the one thing I do want to add is that BuzzFeed included sections from the addendum from the report. Correct? It was from
the
that. From the two pages, right?
Yes.
That talked about some of the concerns and gave details of the information that they had about that they believed that the Russians had and were using or could have used against the president-elect, including an allegation that he was in a in coming to Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant. Is that correct? Was that the pageant that he owned?
Yes.
To go to the Miss Universe pageant, wanted to stay in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in the same room that Michelle and Barack Obama stayed in when they visited. And the report says because of his hatred of them, and then would hire prostitutes to then urinate on one another as he watched. So that is one of the salacious allegations that is in the CIA report. I have to say that the CIA report. So with that set up, I turn it over to the panel.
Go, Rosemary.
Okay. I think that the nature of the salacious behavior has taken over the debate. It certainly did last night. There are so many jokes about golden showers and what the president-elect may have done that we're losing sight of why this is really important. And that is not exactly new. Malcolm Nance talked about it at this radio station and on MSNBC, which is that the president-elect appears to have a very close relationship with Russians, may have talked with them during the election. Certainly he called on them to turn over some emails that they may have on his opponent. So it indicates that there was a close tie. He certainly seems to be going along with the Russian agenda, calling into question whether NATO is effective anymore to okay the Crimea take back by Russia. So was there basically a buyout? Did the Russians win him over? That is treasonous. And that is important. I think that this is ultimately going to be really bad for the media because we did have this memo before. We did know about this, and we didn't run it because it's unverifiable. You would have to actually find and talk to prostitutes in the room who were peeing on the Obama bed in order to verify it. That is not going to happen. And so most news media didn't run all the actual details. And now those details could be used to just, like, throw out the whole report, which is really based on the Russians trying to get material so they could turn the president-elect. And that's what concerns me.
Well, what concerns me, of course, is the fact that if there is salacious material, that it could be used to blackmail Trump. And there are those people who suspect that that was what was going on all along when Trump was saying, oh, yeah, I don't care how much they hack and do this, because he knew from the beginning that he was on very shaky ground. I'm only saying why the salacious stuff counts.
Well, that fits a narrative, right? I mean, that fits
yes.
something that's completely plausible and makes sense. We have evidence of you doing this,
and we will
help you, and we will do whatever is in our power to elect you as long as you don't turn on us, and if you do, we will use this against you.
Now, there is the question of the, quote, respectable journalist. Remember the respectable
yeah.
journalist who got all of this stuff together? I think we have, frankly, just seen the tip of the iceberg here, because, first of all, there's going to be a whole bunch of people who get into the game later after they leave their sensitive intelligence posts and start to leak like to proliferate
trickle down economics
or even trickle down
yeah really
So yes.
There is this though, Alan, is that this guy is freaking shameless. I mean, how do you embarrass Donald Trump? We have him on tape in his own words, see him right before you talking about grabbing women by the genitals, and that did not knock him out. So a bunch of Russians in an unconfirmed report that came through a British agent who was trying to do opposition research.
Who's being paid to do
who's
it.
Who's being paid.
Initially by Republicans.
Yes,
doing
ma'am.
Apple research.
That's going to knock him out? I don't think so.
Well, you make a good point.
Go ahead, Teresa. I think it's key not to lose sight of his financial conflicts of interest.
Right.
While this is all interesting to talk about, I think we cannot lose sight of his potential conflicts of interest. And they are, you know, right down the street from the White House.
Yep.
And so, you know, certainly you want to look to Russia. Certainly you want to look to China. But you need look no further than down the street from the White House with the Trump Hotel, which is taken over an old post office, which he renovated and is owned by the federal government but leased by the Trumps. And today he's going to have a press conference at 11 o'clock. And if he doesn't say—
Which we'll play here, by the way.
Yeah. Right, which you're going to play live. And if he doesn't say today at 11 o'clock, among other things, that he's going to divest himself of that hotel, and by divest, I don't mean give it to his sons, then clearly he's going to just down the street have serious conflicts of interest, and as well as perhaps in Russia. Because the other, you know, and the other part of this, besides the salacious personal behavior, is... ongoing interactions with Russians.
Absolutely.
And Paul Manafort is still in his orbit. I'm sorry. Go on.
No. I have one other point I want to throw out for the panel to discuss, and that is James Comey, who knew about this in October. Mm-hmm. So how come the flimsy, nothing-to-it report about Hillary Clinton, he goes in front of the cameras to talk about, and this we don't hear about until now after the election?
And Angus King brought that up yesterday.
How does he justify that?
He was asked about it in the hearings.
Yeah, there was that wonderful interchange in which Comey says, we don't talk about ongoing investigations. Yeah, everybody in the room cracks up.
King said, yes, the irony is certainly not lost on me on that.
Right. In the midst of all of the news that went on yesterday, there was very little attention to the fact that the Senate Intelligence Committee had a hearing on Russian hacking.
Right.
And he was asked over and over about this. And Clapper also was asked not about this, but in general, and said how serious it is.
We have to go take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. I know this will shock you. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those.
And a lot about Rosemary.
We'll get back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we have a lot to talk about, as I mentioned. Probably the best way to further the conversation is go through some of the letters and give our panelists a chance to talk about some of the information in those. And we'll start because we have a lot of letters.
Oh my God,
and
look at them all.
I know.
That's quite a pile.
So we'll start
democracy
off.
Democracy at work, right? Pile. People engaged.
Yeah. dear Lord. So we will start. I think we'll probably start talking about, I know a lot of these have to do with Rosemary's comments on President Obama's speech, and then we'll slowly get into the Russia stuff.
Malcolm says, personally, I was positively inspired to get more involved than I've been. Obama did warn us about the threats to our democracy, and he told us to get involved to fix it. We need to be optimistic and organized, and that's from Malcolm. Rosemary, Obama did his best, and yet here we are, and suffering this great loss and trying to deal with it. Well, it's normal to want to find someone to blame. It's grief you feel, and I feel it too. And Alan says, sounds like Rosemary has completely missed the subtleties of Obama's farewell speech. Ineffective because he didn't get Hillary elected. That's really an odd criticism. And Barbara says, I don't believe anything should be reported until they are thoroughly vetted, as this undermines the media and just then becomes background noise.
It was given as an addendum to a report by intelligence officials. Should that not be looked at carefully.
Okay, so here's how journalism works. It isn't just one agency that puts out the news. CNN and a team of reporters led by Carl Bernstein, who, of course, is the premier investigative reporter of our generation, Watergate, comes out with a report completely factual and very pulled back, saying the Russians have been collecting material about the president-elect and that this was dangerous. It looked like an attempt to turn him, and that the report about this had been given to both Trump and to Obama. That was the news. And if that were all that we had, it would be a whole different thing. In fact, something similar to this has been reported by Mother Jones and by other outlets between October and right now. But then what follows is BuzzFeed, which is mostly legitimate, but certainly not of the stature of a CNN or a Washington Post.
But that's not how they see their role, right?
That's not how they see their role. And they're also in a lot of financial trouble right now. So they're going for broke. They're going for the bold thing. So they come out with a very salacious, juicy, here's the whole report. And that's suddenly the whole conversation turns from whether the Russians are trying to turn a future president to look what Trump did in the past. And it's all dirty stuff with prostitutes, naughty stuff, as his wife would call it. And that's where the debate gets stuck. And there's no question that that report is unverified in the sense that it came from a British agent who was working to find bad material about Trump and was being paid to find that bad material. So it's biased, one-sourced, and unnamed. This would not be reported by most news organizations.
And wasn't.
And indeed was not. However, it's now in the public purview. And so you're going to hear, you already have, Trump comes out and says, fake news. Kellyanne is going to come out and say, this is the media trying to get him again. And they're not completely wrong. But that's how it happened. This is not a good thing for journalism.
Well, I want to go back to Joe's point, which I thought was profound, which is that this is an official report that is being released by the United States Senate, which we are now learning about. Why is that not relevant to this?
It is relevant, but what has happened is it's been overwhelmed by the details of what material the Russians may have been collecting on Trump about perverse sexual behavior.
But it also, I'm sorry, Rosemary, but it also means he's projecting himself by going over there, and if it's true, and behaving in an abysmal manner, which puts him at risk.
If that were the discussion that I see being had across the country, I would say, great. But you go on social media, go on Twitter, go on Facebook, and what you're hearing about are prostitutes and urination. That is not helping either the political discourse or the discussion about whether our president-elect has done something improper.
But in the long run, what we really need to get at is the potential conflicts of interest and interactions they may or may not have. And I thought, and Joe, can you speak to Kellyanne Conway and what she said last night when asked about this? And
well, Kellyanne Conway was on, and I must say, I think I speak for the group here, that if you saw, we were talking about it before we went on, Seth Meyers on Late Night last night on NBC had a 15-minute interview with Kellyanne Conway, which was singularly one of the best interviews of her that I have seen.
Mm-hmm.
He was comedic, and he was also very, very good journalist of going after her on her answers and asking her, pointing out when she was pivoting and talking to her and saying, okay, but that doesn't make sense. Follow this through. And if you say this, then you can say that. And he was really very good at I think, even keeping her focused.
Mm-hmm.
And
what time of night was this?
Well, I watched it at 7 o'clock this morning.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It was on particularly late last night.
Yeah, it was on 12:30, but it was
because of the speech.
Right.
But you can see it online. Go look at it.
Anyway, the whole issue about the Russian hacking was just breaking. So you figure they taped that show at 5:30. That story was just coming out at that time. CNN had just reported. And I think even Seth Meyers said that he was just getting dressed when he heard the story. So she was responding to the very, very earliest inklings. And said that it was...
Trump didn't remember being briefed on it. Well, first she said...
There was nothing to it. It was the Russians. Why do you believe the Russians? And then he said, But
she said it was only on paper, that he hadn't actually been briefed, that it might have been on a memo, a two-page memo
turned in at the end of the report.
So and then he hadn't really remembered.
And then he hadn't read it.
He said he had read it. That Seth comes out and says, no, he did say it. He was briefed on it. And then she goes, oh, well.
Yes, it was.
He doesn't remember.
So
I think if he was briefed on it, he probably would have remembered.
Well, this is two separate tangents, ladies and gentlemen. But one of them is, don't you think that, I mean, that's what this press conference is going to be at 11 o'clock, right? I mean, isn't that what it's going to be?
Somebody's got to stand up, although they may have a whole bunch of, fall guys who are going to ask questions that are not related to this. It's got to be asked.
Well, they're going to be asked, but I don't think they're going to be answered. They're going to be answered in this exact same fashion. I didn't see it. I didn't know.
It's not true.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about
fake
it.
Fake news. He'll just keep saying fake news. Has he tweeted? The other thing that's, I thought, interesting, Walter Dellinger, who was a former solicitor, in December, he called on Attorney General Loretta Lynch to appoint an independent counsel to investigate any U.S. persons who may have worked with the Russians in illegal campaign hacking. And that was retweeted again last night. And she still has time to do that. And the question is, would she? Probably not, but it certainly is an interesting question.
Can I say one thing which the media has persistently failed in, which is to explain why it's important that we not collaborate with the Russians, why we are not friends with the Russians. Vladimir Putin is a former KGB agent who wishes to bring Russia back to the great state that it was in during the Soviet era. And his way to do this, he has decided, is to break up the Western alliance. Mm-hmm. He is working systematically and highly effectively to make the U.S. not the beacon of moral rectitude that it used to be, not the beacon of power that it used to be. And he's doing the same thing in Western Europe. We're going to see it in Germany when Angela Merkel comes up for election. And he is succeeding. And that is why this is important. It must be guarded.
And that's a very good point. And separate from Donald Trump's alleged personal behavior with Russia, there are a lot of questions about his financial dealings in Russia, and
there's one line in that report of saying that they had the information on his personal finances, and you have to wonder if it's the tax returns, right?
And NPR had a great report today from the two ethics specialists, who I have not seen this, but they said they laid it out in an article in Politico yesterday, which I want to go back and look at, but raising serious concerns about Trump's. And so today, in addition to being asked about his, potentially asked about his personal behavior, I think what Americans really need to know about is his financial ties in Russia, in China,
Ukraine,
and in Ukraine, and in other places. And in the midst of all of this, today the Senate's going to vote to begin repealing Obamacare.
Unbelievable.
Which is another story.
Another whole other thing. I mean, it's just amazing what's happening.
Ethics Commission thing is important, too, because the Ethics Commission has been very outspoken, unusually so, about how we're bypassing this and vetting the candidates for the cabinet.
And these guys are sort of civil servant types.
Exactly.
These are not partisan.
So you're seeing the Trump camp right now is really beginning to politicize them. Oh, what are they after? They're on the Democratic side. They're sore losers. And yet they also pulled back, four of the hearings now. So they can say both, like, see, we're trying to go along. We're doing what you want, giving you more time. And they're all political. Don't listen to them. Unbelievable.
By the way, Rosemary, I think there's a subtlety here that that we may be missing. And that is, there's a difference between the people who are running the Senate, the Republicans who are running the Senate, and Trump. And it's very interesting to watch these people get up, either lie or tell the truth and say, no, I would never go along with Trump if he did this, and so. So I think there's this bifurcation of the Republicans in the Senate who know they got to face an electorate at some point or another and have to be very careful about not shoving through these nominations. I watched some of them on television this morning, and boy, they seem nervous.
And it's not the Democrats who are setting the schedule.
No.
Despite what Kellyanne Conway was saying last night, disparaging the Democrats for not wanting to allow these nominations to go through. In fact, it's the Republicans that set the schedule. And I will say it's important to look at the hearing yesterday on the Homeland Security person, General Kelly, because that is operates as one would, as it traditionally is supposed to. Here is a person who the Democrats may have some disagreements with, but
he's qualified.
He had his ethics paperwork in line. His hearing went on as scheduled. He's going to be approved. It was, by all accounts, a very gracious hearing. And so that's, if you don't have conflicts, that's how it works. If you do have conflicts, that's not
but the, you're right. The conflicts over people who have not turned in paperwork, who have not been vetted even in the slightest, and suddenly they're going up for their hearings, which have not done.
Four hearings have been delayed. Postponed. Alan has a fistful of letters. We're going to get to those in just a second. We're going to take a break. Real quick, the headline on Breitbart this morning: peak fake news. BuzzFeed, CNN target Trump with admittedly unverifiable Russian memos.
See, told you.
That is to Rosemary's point. We'll continue after the short break. All right, I'm going to go right to you, Alan.
Okay.
Here are the letters.
Daisy says, I know why you did that. Daisy said, I love the speech, but I did it, but I love the speech, but I did it was slightly patronizing in its everything is going to be okay tone.
Yep.
These are dangerous times, and we could be witnessing the end of America as we know it. Daisy, I agree with you. Whatever it's worth. Good morning, panel. Rosemary is right on all points regarding Obama's speech, says Paul. It was a leadership moment that he missed. Our team, the Democratic Party, is in shambles because of him. Oh, boy. Mike says, the irony is striking. Donald Trump called the BuzzFeed and CNN reports on the Russians having incriminated and salacious information on him as fake news and a witch hunt. Apparently, he didn't mind using fake news when it denigrated Hillary Clinton. The shoe is now on the other foot, and he doesn't like it.
Or birtherism.
Yeah.
Right. Good point.
Cynthia says, I heard all that you said of the speech, but I also heard an amazingly crafted speech that was a call to action to the populace of all that is being threatened. I heard, by the way, that was his fourth or fifth draft of the speech that he did. He really works hard on his writing.
Yeah, they said even as he was coming in on the plane, he was still making adjustments.
So was Abraham Lincoln.
On the back of the napkin.
Except that hard work doesn't count in the final project. That's what I tell students.
The hard work.
He worked hard on it, but there were problems with it. It was overcrafted.
Okay.
He tried to do too much.
Steven says, listen, this was amazing. I was there and I cried my eyes out. And now on a plane heading home, please re-listen Rosemary.
The Constitution is, quote, really just a piece of parchment. It has no power on its own. We the people give it power, close quote. Barack Obama last night. I love that.
Good morning. Good morning, says someone. I think Rosemary's right. A more ominous and warning tone would be appropriate. Obama has always been a soft-spoken optimist, tending to avoid strong language. One of his shortcomings when more assertive language and action could have been accomplished more. And that's from John. That's very interesting. Do you call out a liar for being a liar? Do you say, you're a liar? Or do you say, that rises, I think he had a line like it, that rises to not being truthful.
Understands the role, he respects, he has reverence for the office of the presidency. And
well, are there times not to have reverence for the office of presidency? What if it turned out, Teresa, if Trump was to lead us into a fascist state, would anything that anybody have said beforehand have been inappropriate?
I think before the election, he warned us that democracy was on the ballot. President Obama did. I think he was pretty blunt.
He did. No, he did.
Right. Sounds like a platitude. Democracy is always on the ballot.
Samantha, I ask you, Alan, how on earth can anyone blackmail Trump? He would have had to have some sense of dignity in order for anything salacious about him to matter to him. Unblackmailable. Jackie says, good morning,
everyone. It's a good point.
It's true.
I was trying to say,
He cannot be. The Russians may have underestimated their ability to get material that can hurt him, unless it's financial.
But as Alan made the point, and I agreed with, was that it seems like a plausible scenario, doesn't it? I mean, that makes sense.
You said, does anybody here not believe the information? Oh, no.
Right,
yeah,
but
we believe it.
The voters saw the tape, right? Not entertainment.
Access Hollywood.
Access Hollywood tape, and they voted. It's personal behavior is not the issue with him. Obviously, people listened to what he said. He mocked a handicapped person. He denigrated Muslims.
I said 100 times I didn't mock it. I would never do that.
I just said he was groveling.
He lied about mocking a...
I have a question for the panel on that one issue, because it keeps coming around that I never did that. I never did it. I've said 100 times I never did it.
Roll tape.
If you put him... No, forget about roll tape. If you, well, I mean, the tape is so damning, the, you know, the holding the hand up and all, and, yeah, and mocking. The, but what if you put the lie detector on his arm? Would he pass it?
Oh, yeah, I think he would.
He'd say,
I totally think he would. It's and it's, you know, it again, there's an assault right
now. And you think
right
that too,
now.
I assume, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I think
I mean,
he would pass.
I don't know. I think there are certain personality types which they internalize truth as they see it. Immediately.
The Trump administration is launching an assault on truth. We've already heard one of his spokeswomen say there's no such thing as facts anymore. You can believe what you want. And the second thing is Kellyanne's idea that are you going to believe what came out of his mouth?
As opposed to what
you saw? Or listen to what's in his heart. What? What?
That should be immortalized.
Oh my God!
That should be on somebody's
That's
wall.
That's Goebbels. That's Goebbels worthy.
Somewhere.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that is. This conversation came up in the Seth Meyers interview last night, and Seth Meyers said, "Then how do we know what is in his heart?" And she said, "Well, we know." And Seth Meyers completed her sentences
because
by what comes
it.
Out of his mouth, right? I mean, it is unbelievable.
Crazy. He really held her account for what she says, which has not happened that much.
And
Senator Sessions in the hearing yesterday, when he was asked about Hillary Clinton, and one of the things he said, he had to recuse himself because of the lock him up. And
yeah.
He said he didn't recall saying lock him up, lock her up, but he certainly was there when it happened.
He was right there when the chanting was going on.
And
yes.
He said, but he thought it was just a joke.
Oh, my God.
It was just a joke.
Well,
and this gets to your point, Alan, about does he believe what he's saying, or is it all just marketing?
I was watching, talking about marketing with Sessions, I was watching as he raised his voice in almost violent protest that he never did what he was being accused of. I am not a racist. I am not a racist.
God.
That was so
And one more assault
well, Richard
on the
Nixon,
truth.
I am not, you know.
Right.
I'm sorry. One more assault on the truth is now underway. We're looking at a committee being set up to look at whether vaccines lead to autism.
Oh, can you
as
imagine?
As if this had not already been determined by scientists.
Well,
you
so has global warming, right?
Exactly. The same thing.
And so who did he go to get? Robert F. Kennedy,
a
Jr.
A leading anti-vaccine proponent.
A little bit of gorilla dust there, I think, in terms of trying to distract people. But you would think if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was going in to talk to Donald Trump about something having to do with science, given Kennedy's focus on climate, that would have been at the top of the list of things to talk about.
Yeah.
So sadly, it did
What's
not.
What's gorilla dust?
It's
like fairy dust?
It's throwing dirt in people's to try to distract them.
Dirt.
To try to.
I was going
to
ask. I'm glad you asked. I was about to ask.
I was too. So
yeah. Sorry. It's throwing dirt. Gorillas pick up dirt and throw them at their opponent
to distract them.
Is that a beltway term?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, it is.
Okay, that's
no,
good.
No, we like that. You think these colorful expressions.
All right, we have 5 minutes. Go
Jackie
ahead.
Jackie says, good morning, everyone. Rosemary, I love hearing your commentary and strong but very thoughtful opinions. But my jaw dropped and capital S dropped hearing you say that Obama was ineffective and that his speech was disappointing. He's always seen his role as someone to lift us up, even in the face of adversity, and he continued to do that in his farewell speech, and that's from Jackie. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
I'm curious about your thoughts on who President-elect Trump will call on in his press conference today. That's a very good question.
Yeah, that'll be
because these press conferences
are,
to use his words, rigged, and they have been rigged for a long time with a lot of presidents, even Obama.
Which is why it would not be a big loss if we didn't have them.
Okay. Will he attempt to control the topics by answering questions from friendly media rather than tougher questions from the New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, etc.? And that's Graham. Hello, panel. I have never written in before. When I heard Rosemary's comment on President Obama's farewell speech, I had to respond. I agree with Alan. I agree with Alan, that he was giving us comfort and also hope. I needed that. I am 71 years old, and I am more than depressed about our new president. I'm sick about it. My husband and I attended the Four Freedoms March in Pittsfield on Saturday and felt strengthened by the solidarity there. Still, my heart feels broken over President Obama leaving, and I thought his goodbye to us was excellent. And that's from Esther. And David says, don't expect a real divestment, as Trump maintains that conflict of interest laws don't apply to the president. And James says, since the House will never vote to impeach Trump, if these allegations against Trump are proven, is there any other legal mechanism to remove him from office? Or will the Senate Republican-Democratic coalition work to make him powerless? Interesting question. I think, by the way, that you are underestimating how senators like to keep their offices. And we're talking about, and you've been there, Teresa, when Watergate really got hot after he got reelected, boy, there were people running for the, Republicans running for the hills to make sure, and some of them really distinguished themselves. I think if they think it's them or him, it's going to be him.
Right. And what's unfortunate is, and this is probably is, but there is so much work that needs to be done in this country. And I think this is what we're going to be focused on, is his conflicts of interest. And I think today we're not going to learn anything new that's going to put us off this trajectory. This is on a collision course with facts, you know.
Why then do you think that press conferences are important? You just said we're not going to learn anything new. It's a chance for him to get out and get his very skewed point of view. Why are they valuable then?
Because it puts him on the record as giving non-answers.
Well,
so I don't think he's
going to
change his.
I
don't think he's going to change his position.
No,
I do think that there's a big difference. I think that when the New York Times put out that transcript of the conversation they had with him when he went in, you really understood. I mean, one of my concerns about Donald Trump is that he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and he doesn't have the depth of knowledge on a range of issues that he's going to be in charge of very soon.
I was listening to a really interesting conversation coming in this morning about this very, very subject, and one of the points that was made, and I thought it was a good one, is to Teresa's point, is that this press conference allows for what you've been saying all along, for journalists to do their job, that you have to have the starting point, and that starting point is what he says. And even though it's going to change, and you said this, 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 and this, this tweet said this, this, and this, that if you put something on the record, that you at least have a starting point.
Not unlike the hearings. So Sessions, yes, he will become Attorney General. But
this sounds really good, except it doesn't work that way. And that session with the New York Times was not a news conference. He was alone, close to the public,
and
talking to reporters. That's not a press conference. And Trump is an expert at playing to the public. He is not going to be playing to the journalists there. He's going to be presenting his case. He's going to be politicking. And that is not doing journalism. That's not getting information or putting stuff down on the record. Sorry, I'll shut up now.
No,
we're going to take a break, and Ray Graff is ready to give us some news, and we will be back, and we will continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and we have Teresa Bourgeois with us. And we, I just want to reiterate what Ray Graff mentioned during his newscast, that we'll be running the Donald Trump President-elect's press conference from New York City. NPR coverage of that beginning at 11 o'clock, so in just about 54 minutes and 48 seconds. I know that only because CNN has a clock.
Countdown clock.
we'll be going to that coverage. So in the meantime, we have a lot of letters. We're going to go to those, and we'll get in a lot of topics as other. Then we'll move on and do a lightning round of other stuff as well.
Right. Or as we used to say around here, right.
Used to. Say that anymore.
David says, one now has to call into the question of Trump's nominees with ties to Russia. This raises the question whether Trump was influenced in picking nominees sympathetic to Russia because he is compromised, or maybe the appointees with extensive Russia experience are themselves compromised.
And just remember, it's not just Russia. AP reissued an analysis they did of his holdings all around the world, which just go online. And he has holdings and he has debt to China,
Germany,
countries all over the world. It may be all fine, but we need to know.
By the way, I'm still shuddering about the Trump tweet after North Korea's guy said they were going to send the stuff all around, and he said, it ain't going to happen.
That's what scares me the most.
That is scary, because that's a finger on a button. And I hope he knows enough geography to know that China is next door to North Korea. Very important. Okay.
They may be reminding him of that.
Dan says, okay, one of the issues that surfaced in yesterday's whirlwind was the fact that the rubber stamp FISA, FISA court, which proves 99.9999% of all requests, denied the FBI's request to investigate Trump vis-a-vis Russia. Something smells here. Well, we don't know that this is true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do we? We don't really know that. But it's possible.
That's interesting. I just don't know that.
So what? It's the same as the false news that got him elected, says Michael. That's today's way of moving the people. It's about time the left started using their tactics against them.
Very slippery, dangerous slope to
go down the road
of fake news.
It is, because then nobody believes anything after a while.
Right. We need to have a common set of facts. Mm. That's one of the problems. We need a common set of facts that we all can agree or disagree.
Corey says, I'm not a Trump supporter. 4chan. Who's 4chan? Four, letter 4chan. Has admitted to making up the prostitution
story.
It's a website.
Okay.
Trump being compromised by Russia is as plausible as Obama being a Marxist socialist from Kenya. Still not a Trump supporter, but my word, your insatiable desire to erase or undo the election is leading you guys to gullible naivete to believe any negative report about Trump. Truly a bizarre time we lived in. And by the way, I think Rosemary did anything but that this morning.
And we know that he owns he is the developer of the hotel right down the street from the White House.
That we know.
That's not fake news.
And we know he hasn't paid his providers.
We know that he has liens on that property because he hasn't paid plumbers or electricians, or as of last week, he had not.
Which is part of his long-term business plan.
Strategy.
Right.
Yeah.
He doesn't pay.
And we know he says that people knew that I own these businesses before I started.
But he's a horrible person, and yes, I wish I could erase the election.
Kathy says, this brouhaha is not about BuzzFeed or CNN. It's about Putin lobbying, I'm so sorry, one over the bow to remind Mr. Trump who owns him. Jeff says, what the CIA divulged may or may not be true. But do remember that the CIA and other intelligence sources also told us that Iraq had WMDs. That's true. And by the way, that's one of the things that has compromised the intelligence agencies the most in this whole go-around, which is that they were politically motivated and pushed into coming up with something that really has put a cloud over their credibility forever.
But we can't ignore the fact that there are a lot of people out there all around the world who, on our behalf, are trying to keep us safe. And denigrate them constantly is a real problem.
There are 17 agencies who have agreed that Russia interfered. That's an unusual amount of unanimity. And that alone bears further investigation.
This is a good one from Jim, our good friend in Millbrook. Okay, folks, what if this all proves true? Clearly, Trump cannot move into the White House. So what happens then? Trump moves into the White House. Could Obama remain in office another year until a new election is held? No.
No. Donald Trump's going to move into the White House, and then we have to be... One of the things that Kellyanne Conway has referenced in the last week repeatedly is this notion of what he's going to do on that first day. And separate from all of his conflicts of interest, the policy questions are pretty daunting in terms of what he can do with executive orders.
Absolutely. And he's going to.
And she says over and over, there's going to be major change. She said President Obama can say whatever he wants to say in this speech. It's all going to be reversed on day one with executive orders.
And you can imagine what a kid who has finally breathing a little deeper, who is the son of people who are here undocumented, is feeling, and now all of a sudden that safety net is ripped from that child.
And you can imagine that there are people I don't know this to be a fact, but you imagine that Vice President Pence and Steve Bannon and other folks are working on those policy questions right now when no one's focused on policy. And the policy changes we do know are underway are what's going on in the Senate with a Votorama this afternoon to try to rush through the changes in health care before the Republicans.
You know, Teresa, I think they're having a little bit more trouble with that one than they thought they were going to be.
Right. Think that's why yesterday Donald Trump was saying let's move it along, because they think if it hangs out there much longer, they're going to lose Republicans, and they may still.
Well,
make America great again.
20 million people.
So it's not just conflicts of interest, it's policy. I mean, it's real serious policy questions.
And remember Trump winning by 1% in those three key states.
Gosh.
Those people have senators. You know, there are senators in there who say, what happened to him could or could not happen to me. So I don't want anybody to think that these Republicans, especially as time goes on, are immune from political pressure. They are not. Brucey says, GOP may prefer a weakened Trump. What will it mean for Ryan McConnell if Trump takes office under this cloud? Well, that's an interesting question. McConnell, I don't think there's any doubt about it. He's just going along. But I think Ryan's a guy who wants to be president of the United States and who has to think very carefully about what his legacy is going to be. If, for example, he gets rid of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, then what does he put in its place, and do people hold it against him forever that he didn't have something else ready to go when he got rid of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, amazingly, I agreed with Hannity yesterday when I heard him on the radio talking about the fact that how astounding it is that the House and Senate Republicans and president-elect didn't have an alternative ready, a bill ready to go. And I think it will be a test of Ryan, and so far he's failing the test. He doesn't have an alternative bill that's viable.
Well, he can't get his conference together, that's for sure.
Right, he can't get votes for it. And so their political rhetoric around health care is crashing into the policy realities of making the changes that they claim to be making.
You've always talked about policy realities, and everybody's eyes glaze over when
exactly
you say policy
right,
realities.
But I know, but now it is that you can say that you're going to provide health care, protect pre-existing conditions, all those things that they claim, but they've never put legislation behind it. And the experts, the policy wonks who no one is paying attention to, know that you can't do all those things.
You know, Charlie Wilson once said, what's good for, GM? Was it GE or GM? GM is good for America. I'm beginning to think that what's good for the Trump people is going to be, the saying is going to be, whatever's good for the insurance companies and the other guys is good enough for us, good enough for America, because that's what the alternative is going to be. Put more money in the pockets of those folks.
Well, what Republicans talk about is we're going to provide access, and what Democrats talk about is we're going to provide coverage. And there's a big difference between providing access and providing coverage, because if you only provide access, people might not be able to afford that access. Well, you have access to it, but if it's unaffordable.
And you got to sign up.
Right.
All right. Let's go to, we have a lot of other topics. Mm-hmm. And I want to try to get to as many as we possibly can in the 10 minutes or so that we have left. So if I can actually find them, we'll get started. Here we go. So I want to talk about the health care repeal and the Trump telling Congress to repeal and replace health care law.
I think we were just talking about that.
Yeah.
Right. Okay,
a little more detail. Sorry.
I want to get to your. I want to get to the point of. But what does this say about? What does this say about? I guess this is my main concern. What I want to ask you is, what is the plan, and does anybody have any sense as to what that replacement is?
I just spoke to that. I think anything that puts money in the pocket of the insurance companies, the other guys, is
no,
going
I
to
understand
replace
that,
them.
But I mean, has anyone? Is there even like a floating something that has gone through any?
Yeah, they're going to be. You're not. First of all, they have to keep the kingpins up about 26 years old, but they're going to start talking now about crossing state lines. Insurance companies will be allowed to sell across state lines. What I just said to you, it's always going to be, what can we do to help our friends make money?
Why is that a bad thing for insurance companies to sell across state lines?
Well, let's assume it's not, but it is a bad thing to take away people's insurance from them. In other words, is that, Rosemary, I guess here's my question to you, is that the replacement?
No, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that they want to, Trump has said he wants to keep all the things that are popular about Obamacare. 26-year-olds are covered, coverage of pre-existing conditions, right. And there's no plan that has surfaced yet that explains how you pay right. for that without the individual mandate, which they universally hate and don't want to support. I get that. What I don't understand is what does insurance companies selling across state lines, how does that affect any of this? How does it take away coverage? How does it change the economics of it? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, in other words, you're saying, what's the mechanics?
Right.
And we don't see that.
But we have a policy wonk here.
Well, I think the sorry.
That was not an insult. That was a compliment, Teresa.
Yeah, no. I think the issue is that if you have, they say that they're going to cover you if you have pre-existing conditions. Well,
right.
the way that they claim they're going to do that is to have these special pools that you can join, right?
Right.
But then that puts all the sick people in those pools.
It's in one pool, right.
And then there's the price tag on that.
Mm. It skyrockets.
The way healthcare works is if you have well people and sick people all in the same pool together and you right. spread the cost.
And you have enough well people to
and you have
support
enough
the sick people, which we don't right now.
Well,
lots
people.
Of young people who are right. rarely sick
and
they pay in a lot of money and they don't take any out. Right.
right. And so the way you do that, just like with auto insurance, you have to have a mandate. Everybody has to have coverage.
Right.
Right. And so they don't want to have the mandate, but they want to have everybody have to have coverage. The other thing that they're saying is that they're going to cover, you can have everybody on your policy up to age 26, but they aren't going to mandate what insurance companies provide. Well, if you're not going to mandate what insurance companies provide, you can't mandate them to have people
26-year-olds on the coverage.
Right.
right.
So the way they get around this is what I was saying earlier. They say, well, we're going to have access to these things. And the Republicans talk about access. That means that there will be some plan that has that. But you can have access, but you can't afford that access. And the Democrats say what we actually have to focus on is coverage, meaning
right.
do you have not just access to coverage, but coverage. Mm-hmm. And people think, well, I don't get my health care through the exchanges, so this doesn't really affect me. But what they're beginning to realize is it does, because right now, for all the preventive services that are required, that you know you have to get these preventive services and you don't have a copay, that's all going to go away unless the insurance company decides to provide it. There are all of these mandates. The Republicans don't want to mandate the insurance companies to do anything.
Okay,
but
so
they say
I'm not,
that the market will drive that.
That's all very interesting, but I'm still not sure that I see what are you saying that insurance company, there might be one insurance company in New York that can offer coverage for some pre-existing condition to the whole country, and if you can afford their high prices, then you get it,
right.
And they're not allowed to do that now?
Right now, you can't sell across state lines. You can, insurance, you have to have different plans across state lines. But the experts will say if you sell across state lines and you'll have different plans and it will be a lowest common denominator. You'll keep having less and less available.
But it will probably end up costing you more money.
Costing you more money.
And I have to say it's going to be a huge boon for the middle of the night or very early morning advertisers who will have these specialty companies that say if you
call
have
now before midnight
mesothelioma or whatever it is, this is the place, this is the insurance company for you.
Well, and as President Obama, if people should listen, again, policy wonk, but there was a Vox interview that President Obama did with Vox. It was a long interview on healthcare, and it's on cspan.org, and it was very interesting and very understandable. But if the Republicans do have an alternative that you can provide all of these things at an affordable price that the government can afford, that's terrific. But as he has said, if they had a plan that would work,
I'll support it.
Then why haven't they put that plan forward up to now? If they had a solution, then why hadn't they come forward up to now?
So what's the prognosis? The prognosis is they're going to repeal it, they're not going to have a good plan, and they're going to be phony about it.
Remember, it took 30 years to pass the ACA, the Affordable Care Act.
Sure.
And so they say, well, we're going to repeal now, and then we'll work out a replacement over the next year or two. But it took them 30 years to build consensus to get something passed.
And you got 20 million people who won't have the coverage.
Right.
Bill O'Reilly, anyone?
Oh, great.
What a pig.
Look, I don't like this guy. I've never liked him. Now, Joe, to be fair, you've heard me say again and again on this show, I can't stand that guy. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
And now, because in my little town of Great Barrington, you know, we didn't put up enough Christmas lights or any Christmas lights, and he got crazy, and we became the subject of everybody in the world.
A pinata.
For not having, you know, this thing. So now this guy's a pig, right, Rosemary?
What a house of horrors Fox News must have been. You have Roger Ailes and Riley running around taking their pick, aiming at all the pretty young newscasters they had there. I can't imagine the atmosphere.
I mean, and it is the quintessential casting couch. If you want to get on the air and you want to keep your show, this is how you do it.
Right. Do people know what the story is?
The story is... Oh, Teresa.
She's been policy.
No, I know.
I'm all about the details.
I know. All right, let's talk about the story. So Bill O'Reilly, apparently the story that came out yesterday is during this time of where Roger Ailes was up against and leaving, Fox was settling a sexual harassment allegation against Bill O'Reilly. And the documents show that that occurred. And not only that, that it was not the only one, that there had been others in the past. We should note that the employee, the woman who was given the settlement was not the one who ultimately
this was leaked
the information.
Another newscaster, right?
Yes, this was a woman by the name of Juliet Huddy who had a show on Fox, and so obviously as Rosemary was saying, in the aftermath of Roger Ailes' departure, executives declared that such behavior would never again be tolerated. And this happened. There was a payout, and he continues to be a star at the network.
So when you have a pig in a pig pen, right? You want a pig in the thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But what happens when you have two pigs? Is that a piggery or what is that?
It's a pen, right?
Is a corporate culture that believes that women are there to serve the men. And apparently it was a condition of employment. It was sustained over many years. These are the same men who are passing judgment on, say, Donald Trump, who don't see a problem with his behavior. I wish that it were a rare thing. I think that there are other places like Fox News that are not involved in news, but in other businesses where the same thing happens. And women, we have got to stick together. We have to start calling this out. We have to stop it.
I thought the interesting part of this story about the woman who Juliet Huddy who left, her father was a confidant of Mr. Ailes, a consultant to Fox News. He left the network in July. Her brother still continues to work as a correspondent in Jerusalem. That must be very tough, mm-hmm. I would think. All right. Hearing nothing else, we will. Well, yeah, we have 30 seconds, so
okay.
Go ahead.
Trump is an American Berlusconi, and he has the same following of admirers who see nothing wrong with his personal behavior. So is this the role model these followers would hold up to their children?
Right. See, and that's true with Ailes and O'Reilly as well.
I agree with Teresa. The media needs to keep its collective eye on areas of true concern, one of which is Trump's multiple potential financial conflicts of interest that have not been fully revealed or disentangled. I can't read more of that.
And all right. No, go ahead.
Panel. It's worth noting that during Joe's stellar interview with Malcolm Nance last week, Mr. Nance said the CIA did not report that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
It was Dick Cheney
Dick
who
Cheney.
Said it.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. A reminder, we're going to be running the Donald Trump press conference at 11 o'clock. NPR coverage coming up. The roundtable will continue. My thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Teresa, and we'll be back after this.